Thanks, Denise. Well, we have Joe William Trotter Jr., who is Professor of History and Social Justice and founder and director of the Center for African American Urban Studies and the Economy at Carnegie Mellon University. He's the author of a number of publications, including the books Black Milwaukee and Coal, Class, and Color, and he's a past president of the Labor and Working Class History Association. Welcome to KABU, Joe Trotter.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, let's talk about your important new book, Workers on Arrival, Black Labor in the Making of America, which I think the title itself tells us much about how essential African-American labor was to the building of the United States. Was that your intention with the title?
Yes. That was several objectives I had in mind with the title, but more so with the book. There are several things that I had hoped to accomplish. And one of those things was to underscore just how important African-American workers were to the development of America from the beginning of the transatlantic slave trade.
And I'm also reminded about E.P. Thompson's famous book, The Making of the English Working Class. And it seems to me this is a reminder about how crucial black labor was and is to the American working class.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned E.P. Thompson, because when I was many, many years ago a graduate student trying to find my way into a topic that would really make a contribution to knowledge, I was inspired by that book, because in graduate studies we read Across National Boundaries and E.P. Thompson's The Making of a Working Class in the Context of British History served as a kind of inspiration for me intellectually.
Well, the 1619 Project and a lot of good recent work on the history of capitalism has finally begun to make a public impact, I think, on the understanding of the role of the slave labor system in creating American and global capitalism. Your book not only contributes to that narrative about the origins of capitalism, but it highlights the forgotten role of urban blacks in the making of the American economy. What are some of those early contributions of African Americans to the early American economy?
This is a very good point, and I'm glad you underscored the way in which there's an outpouring of scholarship on this question, but very much of that scholarship does focus on the contributions of blacks in rice, tobacco, cotton, and other agricultural environments and pursuits. But yes, the urban environment, I wanted to underscore that black people were urban people who helped to build the cities from the beginning. And so that many times we perceive blacks as urbanites during the onset of the Great Migration of the 20th century. And so by then, everybody almost can get their arms around the idea that the Great Migration had transformed blacks into a predominantly urban people. But what this book tries to show is that there's another part to the story, and that is African Americans were urban people from the beginning. And at the same time that they were building plantations, clearing land and making way for rice cultivation, cotton, sugar, and so on, they were also building cities that served as great marketing centers for these agricultural products. And so one of the prime contributions that I see African Americans making during this early colonial and early American history is that they were laborers on the building of most of these colonial era cities. And not only in Charleston, New Orleans, and in Baltimore and other southern cities, but they were also contributing as enslaved workers as well as free workers on such cities as New Amsterdam, Boston, and Philadelphia. And so my argument and my documentation highlights how black people as workers played a role in building the national network of cities and not just the regional network of southern cities.
And you show how that early history is important for the building of communities that would emerge in the 20th century. And much of your book focuses on the 20th century. And I think maybe people are more familiar with this massive demographic shift that takes place when the majority of African Americans move from the rural South to urban economies, whether the urban South or the West and Northeast and Midwest.
Exactly.
What was the impact of that movement, not only for increasing possibilities and potential for one's economic standard of living, but also the politics and culture of urban America?
Okay, yes, I'm glad you raised that question, and you jumped to the 20th century, but one of the things that I attempt to do in the book is to show that this 20th century great migration and the development of African American life in the 20th century is very much rooted in the changes that took place during the early 19th century, so that the foundation of African American institutional life, and I'm talking about the formal institutional life, where blacks were setting up churches, fraternal orders, businesses of various types, those formative years took place during the antebellum period for many African American communities in the urban North and the South. And so that when the Great Migration opened up and black population exploded in cities, they were not starting from scratch. There were churches that had a long history stretching all the way back to the antebellum period. There were businesses that stretched back, and insurance companies and fraternal orders and so on, that had their genesis in the 19th century. And so that is something that I try to recover, because too often I think we treat the Great Migration against the backdrop of what black life was like in the 20th century rural South. And so our comparison is usually, well, what was life like before black people came to Chicago, before they came to Pittsburgh? And it usually focuses on what life was like in these small southern towns in South Carolina, Alabama, Kentucky, Virginia, and so on. So what this book does is to try to look at the impact of the southern 20th century conditions on stimulating black movement into the cities, but it also tries to show that the phenomenon of black rural to urban migration had deep, deep roots in the early 19th century and also in the 18th century. So that from the beginning of the colonial era, there was a great deal of movement of black people between the cotton, sugar, and tobacco areas into these cities like Richmond, Baltimore, Charleston, New Orleans, Savannah. And so that we have sort of the blueprint, if you will, of the way black people moved historically from rural to urban environment, so that there was not as great a break with the African-American past when we get into the 20th century as we sometimes like to believe.
Well, along with that kind of continuity, you describe the ways in which employers, white workers, and the state collaborated to erect a racial job ceiling. And certainly this occurs in the 19th century, and it continues into the 20th and 21st centuries.
Very much, yes, exactly. That is a major theme in African-American urban life. Even as African-Americans were contributing to the economy, they were also contributing under duress, under the odds, you know, against the grain, so to speak. Lots of barriers were placed in their way of becoming a viable, free, and independent group of urban dwellers. But I will say this, is that one part of the story is very much about the way they contributed to the building of cities and the nation under pressure and within the context of inequality. But at the same time, I tried to underscore that they were also contributing to the building of their own community, and there they faced additional barriers. But in a way, they were trying to build two cities, the city that was predominantly white and they were excluded from, and at the same time, they were trying to build a city within the context of that exclusion, or they created their own sense of community empowerment and cultural development and interaction.
And
so, yeah, so there's a sort of a layering of issues that I tried to come to grips with in this book.
And it seems like it's from that strength of those communities as well as the resistance that you have this very active Black labor movement or African Americans really mobilizing in the workplace even prior to the 1930s CIO beginning to embrace Black workers as key to the organization of all industrial workers.
Right. Yes. Yes, I see African Americans as, particularly Black workers, as a group who have been, in many ways, the victims of a lot of misinterpretation of their history. For example, the American Federation of Labor dominated the organized white labor movement following the Civil War through the 1930s, And the stock image of the Black worker in those commentaries and studies that privilege the history of the white skilled craftsmen is that Black workers were against their own best interest, that they were anti-labor, that they were not interested in organizing collectively and protecting the interests of all workers. So there was this image of Black workers as what these white unionists used to call that Black people were, quote, a scab race. You know, they would break white stripes, they undermined the labor movement, and they were not a reliable ally in the struggle to really equalize the place of workers in the American economy, particularly the industrial economy. But the truth is from the beginning, almost from the beginning, although even during the antebellum period, Black workers were among some of the first people to organize labor unions. And in some cases, they were the ones who really encouraged white workers to organize. And some of those unions took place in the household and domestic service sector, you know, where Black workers in New York, for example, on one occasion, they led a strike to bring greater benefits to all hotel workers, including white workers, and in fact played a role in trying to recruit white workers to support an organized labor movement in that field. And so for a long time, Black people were written off as being strike breakers. And the image about strike breakers emerged in the context of the late 19th century when many industries, including steel, meatpacking, and a few other railroads, those industries had unions dominated by the Railroad Brotherhood and also unions of the American Federation of Labor that had exclusionary clauses in their constitution, which said that Black people could not be union members. And
well,
so Black people had no option.
Well, Professor Trotter, I'm afraid we only have another minute or so, and hate to jump through time so quickly, but given that militancy, just in terms of looking at today, you know, where we have seen so many pundits supposedly analyze the election of Donald Trump as, you know, making generalizations about the working class, which clearly in the minds of these pundits include only white workers. And yet we have seen this mobilization of Black workers throughout the 20th and 21st centuries and really leading the way, as you point out, in terms of providing much of the resistance to this rightward shift in U.S. politics. And so just in the minute remaining, how would you say we can learn from recent mobilizations of the Black working class?
I think it's important to understand that the organization of Black workers and their propensity to unionizing is not new. It's a historic development within the history of Black people going all the way back to the 19th century. And so that we can say that there is definitely a strong continuing historic thread in the Black experience, which says that it's important and right that workers organize collectively and level the playing field when dealing with corporate ownership and employers of labor, and especially in order to bring about greater equity, not only in terms of pay, but in terms of treatment, a role in shaping the workplace.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Joe Trotter, for joining us today on KBOO Radio. And we recommend to everyone the book Workers on Arrival, Black Labor and the Making of America as essential reading.
Thank you.
I've been down in Pennsylvania, where I was working in the mine. And I've been down in Cincinnati, they laid me off the assembly line. Yeah, well, they've got me looking everywhere, but I ain't too proud of what I find. Can't name where I ain't been down, 'cause there ain't no place I ain't been.